extreme radio for extreme times. This is A View from Space with the Spaceman on Talk Radio AM 640.
I'm the Spaceman. This is A View from Space. I'd like to welcome you in right now if you're driving around listening to AM 640. I welcome you in. Or if you're listening to me at work right now with the AM 640 app going, I welcome you in too. Or if you're listening to me on channel 865 on Shaw Direct, I welcome you in also. Or if you're listening to me on your 3 or 4G personal communication device via the Stream the World software, I welcome you in. Or if you're what some call the best seat in the house, sitting in front of your Mac, your PC at home, logged on to 640toronto.com, picking up the live audio streaming there, I welcome you in. Wherever you are in the world, I welcome you in. Okay, so for 1 year only, the NFL will not use Roman numerals to designate Super Bowls. Why? It'll be the 50th Super Bowl. That's big. It's the golden anniversary. The Roman numeral for Super Bowl 50 would be L. The NFL officially thought that, well, it lacked a certain appeal, so they were going to call it Super Bowl 50. The first time the Super Bowl will not use Roman numerals. They will be Arabic numerals. The NFL isn't going to stop using Roman numerals, they've stated. The Super Bowl last season was the 49th, which was called Super Bowl XLIX, or XLIX. This is to be a one-time thing for Super Bowl 50, the golden anniversary. Because Super Bowl 51 will be called Super Bowl L-I, or 1. You know, just the stick, so it'll be L-Stick. Looks like Li, the Chinese last name. So 50 is to be the one-time-only change-up for this golden anniversary of the big game. The most watched television show in, well, history. In America, over and over again, North America, and possibly the world, the NFL feels Super Bowl L had a bad look for the Super Bowl 50, because that's what L is in a Roman numeral, 50. L means a loss in sports, so, okay, that wouldn't be the first time the Roman numerals of the Super Bowl could also be taken for something else, either. For instance, there was Super Bowl XL, number 40. XL, extra large, right? And Super Bowl XXX. Well, that's the smutty adult symbol for, you know, a pornographic show. Super Bowl 30. And it's not like the Roman numeral for the 51st Super Bowl, the one coming after this golden 50th anniversary game. 51 in Roman numerals is L-I, as I said. Doesn't look all that great either, so not wanting some big ol' L defacing their precious logo, the Arabic numbers 50 are there for Super Bowl 50. This very cleverly gets the number 5 connected to the 50th golden anniversary game, the actual numeral 5, because you see, numerology drives the Illuminati. So, the 5 takes center stage tomorrow. Billions will see it. The number is a 5 and a 0. Nothing. So 5 stands alone, you see. In the world of the Illuminati, which are, as I said, guided by three things, sacred geometry, astrology, and numerology, over and over on this show, I've spoken many times about that, and the meaning in witchcraft of the number 5. It's the number of death for you, fortress for the Illuminati. Going deeper into that meaning, you find the number 5 has always been regarded as a mystical and magical, yet essentially human number. Why? Well, we have five fingers. We have five toes on each limb extremity. We have five senses: sight, hearing, smell, touch, taste. We perceive five stages or initiations in our life, like birth, then adolescence, coitus, parenthood, and death. The number five is also associated with what I've been talking about over and over lately, Mars, the planet of war. Five signifies severity, conflict, harmony, but through conflict. See, five signifies severity, conflict, and harmony, but that harmony comes only through conflict. In short, war. In Christianity, Christ was supposed to have five wounds while up on the cross. There are five pillars in the Muslim faith. Prayers are said five times a day in the Muslim world. No, I believe the Illuminati feels that only the number five absolutely must be displayed. It is necessary on this big game. In this big election year in America also. Yes, the real reason they're using Arabic numbers and not Roman numerals is numerology. A five must be in the logo for the 2016 February 7th Super Bowl, the golden anniversary. More when I return. Let's cover a bit of the year of the monkey. Also, let me touch on the death of another astronaut. As you'll recall, not long ago, we were talking about Challenger and its anniversary here on AVFS. I'm a space fan, and I'm just getting started. I'm a space fan. I communicate by email only. I got a couple of addresses. They start coming in before the show even begins. One is space@640toronto.com. The other, spaceman@640toronto.com. And DB writes in from the UK. Unfortunately, I cannot read this one on the air. But it is, let me just say he's thrilled to check the show out. And a lot of expletives in it about how he feels about what's performed here on a weekly basis. And I thank you so much, DB, from the UK. 2016. This year, the year of the monkey, according to the Chinese zodiac. The year of the monkey starts this Monday from February 8th and lasts till January 27th of 2017 on the Gregorian calendar, the one that we use in the West. It's a lunar calendar. The lunar calendar means that the days are chosen by the phases of the moon. Now you know why I bought this astronaut that I'm getting to. The monkey is seen as a clever animal. It's usually compared to a smart person in the old religion of the occult, which is going to be the new religion the Illuminati are tending to bring in to replace today's three monotheistic religions, who will be blamed for all the world's wars and infighting since their very beginnings. The monkey occupies the ninth position by Buddha's side. Yeah, Satan's favorite number, the one that keeps on returning to itself. The monkey possesses such character traits as mischievousness, curiosity, intelligence, and resourcefulness. By the way, 2016, no matter how you cut it, is also a 9 year. You can't get away from it. It just keeps coming back to nine. It is stubbornly. Monkeys are eccentric also, highly intelligent. The monkey is a trickster too, and a master of practical jokes. Although with their playful way they can sometimes hurt the feelings of others, the monkey will spend a lot of its time plotting, scheming, ingenious plans. Although monkeys are intelligent and creative, they sometimes have difficulty exhibiting these qualities. You see, monkeys are supposedly warm and confident and blessed with an excellent memory. Their cleverness and cunning can often help them squeeze out of tricky situations. Monkeys are high-spirited, and their enterprising nature tends to bring them tremendous success in their chosen profession. What I've just told you is what this year is going to be like for events, Illuminati events. Now, their individual characters are different when you combine Chinese zodiac signs with the 12 Western astrological signs, like Aries is brave, the Taurus sign is steady, Gemini is confident, Cancer is the imaginative, Leo is the enthusiastic, Virgo is the cautious one, Libra is the talented one, Scorpio is the diligent one, Sagittarius, supposed to be the honest one, Capricorn, the mysterious one, Aquarius, the gentle one. That's gentle. Aquarius. The age of Aquarius is what we're entering, and the Antichrist will come on at first as that very word, gentle, and soon to turn face. Pisces, the generous one. So 2016 is the year of the red monkey. Not just a red monkey, but a male fire monkey. That's the name the Chinese apply to in the horoscopes. Chinese apply five elements, metal, water, food, fire, and earth, into the Chinese calendar. The male fire monkey is in the fire group. And, of course, the color of fire is connected to red, so therefore the red monkey, the calendar corresponding to the animal. 2016, this year, in the Gregorian calendar, is year 4,713 in Chinese years. According to a Chinese horoscope calendar, the first day of the red monkey, February 4th, actually, 2016. This is the day, not the Chinese New Year's Day. But, and most internet Chinese horoscopes, by the way, use Chinese New Year's Day to determine the Chinese zodiac sign, which is actually wrong. Now, the first day of the Chinese astrological year is the first day of the Tiger Month, the start of spring officially. The Tiger Month begins around February 4, as I just spoke about each year. Now, the monkey is the ninth animal, as I said, in 12 zodiacal signs. There's the rat, the cow, tiger, rabbit, dragon, snake, horse, sheep, monkey, chicken, dog, and the 12th is the pig. The monkey's the animal in the first of the metal cycle. Now, this coming Monday is going to mark the new year in the Chinese calendar. The Super Bowl will be out of the way. Which is a lunar calendar, as I say. It's been heralded by the Illuminati-controlled mass media by the death of one of the 12 astronauts that supposedly walked on the moon, the celestial sphere. The days of a lunar calendar, of course, are calculated to conform to the various phases of the moon. And one of those sacred 12 men who supposedly set foot on the moon and became a god, U.S. astronaut Edgar Mitchell, the sixth man, we're told, to walk on the moon. Six being the number of man here in numerology, and why this has happened right at this time, this juncture, has died at the age of 85. The hidden 13 there, the number of the cult, marking this event. Meaning everlasting life, reincarnation is 13. Because Edgar Mitchell is now a god. We're told astronaut Captain Mitchell passed away in the hospital in West Palm Beach, Florida, exactly one day before, here comes a nine, the 45th anniversary of his moon landing. He was part of the Apollo 14 mission in 1971, supposedly spent more than 9 hours on the moon conducting experiments. He said he had undergone an epiphany in space and in later life revealed the belief that aliens had visited Earth. Mitchell's mission to the moon was the fourth in the United States Apollo series and the first to follow the troubled Apollo 13 flight, that famous one which was aborted in its attempt to land after an oxygen tank explosion supposedly in space, when, in truth, it was actually a ritual performed concerning life, death, and resurrection, because that's the meaning of 13, Apollo 13. You know now why it was Apollo 13 that had the trouble. And it was also named after Apollo, the name of the sun god. Mitchell and his crewmate, another Navy officer, Captain Alan Shepard, supposedly made it safely to the lunar surface. Their landing site was said to be the Fra Mauro Highlands, a hilly area that was actually supposed to be the target of the failed Apollo 13 mission. During their 33 hours at the site, the double three, the two astronauts collected, here comes another nine, 45 kilograms of moon rock for examination back here on Earth, and completed the longest moonwalk in all history. Captain Shepard also supposedly drove a golf ball, if you'll remember those famous moments and saw the grainy footage, that he actually stowed away on board for the purpose. Yeah, they were asked, NASA was asking us to believe that they not only went to the moon and landed there, but a guy took his golf clubs with him. And talking about it later, he said it traveled miles and miles and miles after it hit it in the low lunar gravity. Well, later he'd come down to Earth a bit, if you don't mind the expression, and estimated it traveled about 400 yards. That's about what the pro golfers are hitting that thing these days. 32 astronauts. The backward 23, number 23 in numerology means something that will affect people deeply, every person in the world. And that was Apollo, the Apollo missions. Because I believe the supposed fake lunar landings actually did move people deeply inside their spirits. A backward 23. 32 astronauts assigned to fly the Apollo manned lunar landing program. Of these, 27, including the crew of Apollo 13, left Earth's orbit and flew around the moon. Apollo 1 never launched, and Apollo 7 and Apollo 9 were low Earth orbit spacecraft testing missions only. So, in addition, 9 astronauts flew Apollo spacecraft in the Apollo Applications Program, Skylab, and Apollo Soyuz Test Project. 12 of these astronauts, which is the answer to the question that I ask so many people when they say, oh, space, you believe they didn't land on the moon? I go, okay, you tell me, since you are so informed, how many people actually walked on the moon? How many are there? Most guess, oh, two, three. Well, there were 12, officially. The royal number. And they stopped at the royal number. Three. That perfect number. Because, you see, royalty, the sangral, the holy bloodline, is going to be from this spot in the sky when the Antichrist comes. Royal blood. by the way, of the 12 that have supposedly set foot in the moon, 7 are still alive. I'm Space, AM 640. This is AVFS. Back with more right after this. Email to spaceman at 640toronto.com or space at 640toronto.com. And thank you so much for the ones that you've sent me. I really and deeply appreciate them. Super Bowl 55, they're using the numeral 5, the Arabic number 5, not the Roman numeral number. That's because the Chinese horoscope animals also combines the theory of the five elements, known as the Wuxing. Also known as the five elements, five phases, the five agents, the five movements, five processes, five steps, the five stages. So you see, it's a five-fold conceptual scheme that most Chinese use to explain a wide array of phenomena, all the way from cosmic cycles to the interaction between internal organs, and even of the succession of political regimes to the properties of medicinal drugs even. The five phases are wood, earth, water, fire, and metal. This order is a presentation, and it's known as the mutual generation sequence. Now, in the order of mutual overcoming is what they're after here. Overcoming what? Overcoming the barriers toward a new world order, a new global government, a new system. The system of five phases is used for describing interactions, relationships between phenomena. So this is why the five number and not Roman numeral is being used in the Super Bowl, because this all ties together with the moon, the astronauts, the Super Bowl, a world war, the coming of the Antichrist. So let me just run through the numbers again. 27 of 32 astronauts left Earth's orbit in the Apollo missions. After that, they didn't even bother trying to go to the moon again. 12 of those astronauts walked on the surface. 6 of those drove lunar roving vehicles on the moon, if you can believe that. While 3 astronauts flew to the moon twice. None of them, though, landed on the moon more than once. Don't you think if you were going to land men again onto the moon, you would send someone with experience? No man, none of them, ever went to the moon more than once. I believe they were in a studio and were drugged out of their minds and had no idea where the hell they were. The 9, that's right, count them, the 9 Apollo missions to the moon occurred between December of 68 and December of 72, 1972. And 12 supposedly set foot on the moon. Apart from those 24 who visited the moon, no human being has gone beyond low Earth orbit. They have, those 12, therefore, been farther from the Earth than anyone else. They are the gods. They are also the only people who are directly viewed in the far side of the moon, we're told. The 12 who walked on the moon are the only ones ever to have set foot on an astronomical object other than planet Earth. Yes, those 12, they were what NASA calls the right stuff. You know what constitutes having the right stuff for NASA, don't you? You can be trusted to keep a top secret secret and carry it with you to your grave. Now let me leave the moon and the astronauts for a moment. And let me premise this by saying, let me first of all make you aware of the fact that I always get a surge of email into my inbox just after a show is completed. And that surge in email traffic often spills over into the next day, being Sunday. Now, just after last Saturday night's show, there was one message in particular, that stood out from all the others I received. I know exactly what it was that drew my attention to it. It was the emotion displayed of a mother's love for her eldest son and a passionate desire for his protection from any harm that might come to him. And it was during last week's show at some point that Super Bowl 50 came up. As I was talking about the celestial event that had been heralded by the Illuminati-controlled mass media to be a major celestial event that carried with it a very, very clear, specific message. I was, of course, referring to the alignment of the, here's that number, 5 planets. That celestial message conveyed by this soon-to-peak 5-planet alignment was to be one of the cataclysmic upheavals of immense proportions that the world has seen. That's what the message was in this alignment of 5 planets in this celestial event. And this 5-planet alignment is just now about to peak. And it will be peaking and completed, all 5 in a row, pointing to Horus, the horizon, on, of all dates, the exact day of Super Bowl 50. To be held in the city of Santa Clara, California, at the state-of-the-art Levi Stadium. Which, by the way, as I stated last week, is the greenest, the most technologically advanced professional football stadium in the U.S. The date, February 7, 2016. The date is a 9, any way you want to break it down. Just the date, February 7, February 2, the day 7. Nine. That's without including the year. Throw in 2016, still reduces to a 9. 9 is Satan's favorite number, as he calls it. In numerology, 5 is the number of death for you and I and the masses. It has the opposite meaning for the gods of this world, for the Illuminati. For them, the number 5 is a fortress of protection. Now, let me return to the contents of this email I received last week from a mother who stated that she had a personal and troubling connection with Super Bowl 50. It was about her eldest son, who is the director of food beverages at Knott's Berry Farm in Irvine, California. That's the company that was awarded the contract to serve food at Super Bowl 50 tomorrow. She even noted that February 7th is in fact the 38th day of the year, which breaks down to an 11, the number of destruction. 8 and 3 are, of course, 11. And 11 is never broken down any farther. In numerology, 11 stands as is. My emailer also has intimate knowledge of this catering contract for this year's Super Bowl, as she had a family gathering at her youngest son's restaurant here in Ontario, Canada, just a few days ago, in which her eldest son flew in from L.A. for the occasion. Plus, it's very near the week of the Chinese New Year. These are people of Chinese descent, and it's the year of the Red Monkey celebrations, February 8th. In Chinese culture, the New Year's Eve dinner is believed to be the most important meal of the year for families. It's even called the reunion dinner. Well, he had a gig, this eldest son of this lady, had a gig in at Super Bowl Santa Clara, so he came early to celebrate the Chinese New Year, and they had a banquet. My emailer, of course, as I said, Chinese descent. And in China, most Chinese will be off work for 7 days. Chinese businesses are closed all the 7 days and won't go back to work until what the Western world calls Valentine's Day, February 14th. More on this email when I return on AVFS. This is Talk Radio AM 640 M Space. emails to, got two addresses, spaceman@640toronto.com or space@640toronto.com. Forgive me if I don't get to a few early in the show. I've just got so little time and so much to say. Now, my emailer, as I was talking about before the break, also expressed to me how proud she was of her son and what she called his, well, meteoric rise in his profession. Turns out that the job he had before he got the one he's got now for Knott's Berry Farm in Irvine, California, catering to Super Bowl 50 tomorrow, he was working 9 years at Canada's Wonderland at their as their youngest ever food manager. Canada's Wonderland, by the way, if you've never heard of it, is an amusement park here in Canada owned by Cedar Fair Entertainment Company, headquartered in Sandusky, Ohio, in the United States. Now, here's the disturbing part of what this email I received from this mother wrote me. She said she was racked with anxiety about Sunday. As I've said, her son is the director of food beverages of the company that was awarded the contract to serve the food at the Super Bowl this Sunday, as well as the VIP food service to the celebs attending the game in the private viewing suites. This $9 million contract, she told me, to serve food at Super Bowl 50 also involves a massive tailgate barbecue party that's going to be held in the parking lot just outside the stadium. And the leftover food from that is going to be served to patrons as they're leaving the game, and also at LAX Airport will be served to people there. Also, know this about Levi Stadium in Santa Clara, California. Levi Stadium was, get this, designed by the exact same engineers that designed the World Trade Center towers in New York City. Remember February 7, the 38th day of the year in numerology, is the Super Bowl date, an 11, a number so transfixed to the World Trade Center towers attack forever. There's also this, and it happened just yesterday. You obviously heard and saw even about the construction crane that collapsed, the tower that collapsed and fell into the lower Manhattan street during Friday's morning rush. It's going to be closed for a couple of more days, a couple of blocks. It took up. That was a 656-foot tower. And it fell like a great tower as it crumbled and crashed to the ground, killing a person in a parked car below. The soundbite that the Illuminati-controlled mass media disseminated around the world was of a man speaking and describing, and he is describing the action, and he said, "It was just like 9/11. So there you have the tower, the 11, and September 11th, the World Trade Center tower is invoked. My emailer went on to say, for 23 years, her sister and her exchanged, oh, she said somewhere between 100 and 200 world event predictions with each other on January 1st. And then the following New Year's Eve, they would get together online to see who got the most predictions correct. My emailer said she usually won. She also states she's no football fan, and she doesn't like even spectator sports, and she would never watch one. But she says, "I have been seeing dream images of this event, the Super Bowl 50, since September of 2015. She then stated two predictions about Super Bowl Sunday and asked for prayers for her son's safety and his staff as his sub-managers, as I found out, are friends of her family later in her email. I personally viewed this email as a mother who's very concerned, very anxious about her son, and who, as a mother's intuition, or fear, if you like, really drove this. And it's about safety for her eldest son. You can call it what you like. Mother's intuition, fear. She said the dreams she's had in the last 5 months involved Super Bowl 50, and she felt there would be a disruption of some kind. Just before, or maybe even during the game. She said, I see a start, then a stop, then a start again. Possibly an electrical grid failure, or internet glitch, or a problem with a clock, or an infraction of a rule. Remember, let me jog your memory. Back a couple of years ago, Super Bowl 47, 2014. I covered that Super Bowl too and went deeper than a black hole into it. Remember the lights went out in the third quarter. Between the game was between the Ravens and the 49ers. You're a multi-billion dollar company and you can't keep the lights on? Something very strange. And something very strange is already beginning to happen this year too for this golden anniversary of Super Bowl 50. For instance, on an ominously quiet Super Bowl week build-up in the media, I mean, there was, in the Illuminati media, has nothing going on, really, all this week. No real controversy or anything that reared its ugly head, but something that barely got a mention was the Denver Broncos minor bus collision on the way to Super Bowl Stadium last Monday. And then, of course, there was the thing that everyone heard about, the death of the father of the Broncos lineman, Antonio Smith, later in the week. And Smith said he was, even with the death of his father, going to be playing in the Super Bowl anyway. And will be in the starting lineup come tomorrow, you can rest assured. Marty Williams, his father, convicted of first-degree murder in Oklahoma City in 1991, was serving life in prison without parole in Lexington, Oklahoma State Penitentiary. He'd been in prison for more than a couple of decades, and apparently he died after complications from a recent heart surgery. Now, getting back to the worried mother's email I received, she continued her premonitions, her mother's intuition, or her fears, if you like, whatever you want to call it. She said, I see problems. Weather issues, power grid issues, possibly blackout, internet issues, possibly a glitch with the internet, media disruptions, veiled terrorists threats, seismic issues, ground trembling, cracks in the earth, she wrote, coastline shaking, volcanic plumes and rumblings, for example. She stated weather anomalies, including heavy rain or snow or electrical storm or windstorm, something. Problems with the stadium infrastructure, lighting, electrical plumbing or water, or possible contamination of water, vending machines, cracks in foundations, fire eruption, gas line problems. You know when I read that, what it sounded like to me? And this was last Sunday. It sounded like to me an earthquake. Possible contamination of water. Stadium infrastructure problem. Electrical interruption. Cracks in the earth. Seismic problems. And as you're surely aware, there was a deadly 6.4 earthquake that toppled buildings in the Taiwanese city of Tainan. It happened yesterday, very early in the morning before the sun came up, when most people were at home sleeping in bed. And when an earthquake happens on one side of the earth, it quite often shakes a couple of days later on the opposite side of the Earth. Now, this Taiwanese earthquake news story was shot around the world by the Illuminati-controlled mass media just yesterday, too. It was about the spate of earthquakes in California's Central Valley, felt in 2005. This story was released along with the Taiwanese earthquake. Spates of earthquakes that happened in California, there were a bunch of them, almost certainly, the study said, triggered by oil and gas fracking activity by an oil and gas fracking company in the southern county in California called Kern. We're told scientists made this discovery, and this story broke yesterday, after studying a local surge in injection of wastewater underground, peaking in 2005. Could this Super Bowl 50 be interrupted by a minor or even major earthquake come tomorrow? Let me take you back in time. Just like the movie Back to the Future, which actually stated an earthquake in this very area of Santa Clara. Remember this? It was Game 3 of the 1989 World Series, Major League Baseball. A series that was played between the Oakland Athletics and the San Francisco Giants, right in the Bay Area. Earthquake zone. Game 3 of that World Series championship was interrupted by an earthquake. More on that when I return on Talk Radio AM 640. Spaceman, AVFS. More next.
I'm the guy that calls Space. This is View from Space on Talk Radio AM 640.
Emails to spaceman@640toronto.com or space@640toronto.com. BJ writes, hey, Spaceman, the point spread for the game is at 5-5 for the Carolina Panthers. Looks like it'll be staying there once the game kicks off. And reminding us about something that happened in the football game in one of the Batman movies. Yes, predictive programming, showing you the future in the movies. It's also in Back to the Future, the exact spot, Santa Clara, in that very area, an earthquake shakes California. And I was recalling before the break, Game 3 of the 89 World Series, Major League Baseball, the Oakland A's, San Fran Giants. Game 3 of that World Series championship interrupted, but continued by an earthquake. So I was saying before the break also, the Taiwan earthquake, usually a couple of days after one side of the world gets shaken, the other side of the world gets shaken. The question is, is history about to repeat itself tomorrow? Only this time, not during a Major League Baseball game, championship game, World Series game, but the NFL championship game, of which is the golden celebration of the 50th Super Bowl. That 1989 Major League Baseball series that was shaken by an earthquake cracked some of the stadium, by the way. It was also known as the Bay Bridges series, as the two teams, participating cities, were situated, of course, on the opposite sides of San Francisco Bay, connected by the Bay Bridge, therefore the Bay Bridge series. It was also known as the Battle of the Bay, the BART series even, named after the Bay Area Rapid Transit System, B-A-R-T, the BART series. But it was most famously known as the Earthquake series. As I've jogged your memory for you and reminding you of the earthquake that occurred before the start of Game 3. My emailer, I believe, with the aid of a mother's intuition, expressed her concerns about her son's safety. What's been in her dreams as an earthquake? She has more. She goes on to say, she states, possible gunfire or explosion of some kind, possible situation during the halftime show, an accident, a stabbing or a shooting or looting, perhaps in a parking lot. Also was in her intuition premonition. She also had fears of what she wrote to be some spillover trouble at LAX airport. She said, I worry about two snipers in the tower, purportedly guarding the event, of course. She even went on to say that she felt there might be a problem with an airship or drone, or again, some helicopter flying nearby. She said, I pray for safety on all counts. And signed off her email with this. She described it as, in her words, the image of something dropping down. And the word Thunderbird. Death and five in some combination. Now, if you've been paying attention to the Illuminati-controlled mass media in the last few hours leading up to tomorrow's game, you'll know that they've been heavily promoting the fact that this year's Super Bowl will have over-the-top security deployed in the city of Santa Clara and around the surrounding area. Part of the hype is there will be 4,000 private security staff present to support the hundreds and hundreds of police to help them secure the area. Procedures have been put in place, such as around-the-clock security, bag checks at designated entry points to the stadium. But a joint special event threat assessment earlier this week from the FBI and Department of Homeland Security said there was no information whatsoever to indicate a specific threat to Super Bowl 50 or its surrounding events. But San Francisco Police Chief Greg Suhr was quoted as saying this, the events that happened in San Bernardino and in Paris illustrate how quickly threats have been escalating in an uncertain world. Now, the U.S. Air Force has been also called to deploy a couple of its aircraft. There'll be an F-15 Eagle fighter jet in the sky, and also a Cessna 182 to provide air cover for the event. The use of drones from flying within 32 miles of the Super Bowl stadium in Santa Clara, California, have also been banned between 1400 hours and 2359. Almost to the midnight hour on February 7th. So the long list of federal agencies working the Super Bowl on Sunday will go way beyond the usual enforcement agencies like the FBI, the Department of Homeland Security, or the Transportation Security Agency. There's also NORAD that got into the act, the North American Aerospace Defense Command, which will be enforcing a no-fly zone over the region and coordinating military aircraft patrolling the skies, including a couple of UH-60 Black Hawk helicopters. And there's the, what's known as the DNDO getting involved. That's the Domestic Nuclear Detection Office, which is deploying radiological and nuclear detection surge equipment to sniff out even a nuclear threat. Not to mention the CBP, the ICE, FEMA, the NPPD, the NBIC, the HSI, the IPR, and a whole lot of other agencies, about 60 of them in all, are all involved. Steve Baxter, who's the regional commander, watch commander for the U.S. Customs and Border Protection, said, this is by far the most significant security presence we've ever had at any event in the Bay Area, for sure. Now, there's one other story that fits in with 9/11, New York, and this year's Super Bowl. This year's Super Bowl, for the very first time, will allow Uber to ferry people to the game. More on that on the other side of the break on Talk Radio, AM 640. It's the Spaceman, back with more next. I've got to call Space. You can email me at spaceman@640toronto.com or space@640toronto.com. Thank you so much for the one that you sent. I thank you very much from the bottom of my heart. I really appreciate them. They help me out. Now, I was saying before the break, there is another connection with 9/11 and this year's Super Bowl being the first Super Bowl that Uber has been allowed to ferry people to a game in the NFL. There's a connection here. And the connection is just this. Akamai Technologies acquired Uber in 2007. Akamai Technologies is a content delivery network on CDN and cloud services. Provides, the lion's share of the internet travel today. Their market cap is over $1 trillion for the company. They own Uber. This is why Uber is Teflon and around the world has been able to be the disruptor in the transportation sector. Akamai Technologies came with a power from an algorithm that was put together at MIT. A graduate student, MIT, Applied Mathematics School in Boston. Top of the line. See, this is where the idea catchers are, the professors. They wait for the young people with the bright minds to come up with the wonderful ideas and then give them to the corporations. Case in point. You know all the high-definition, great-quality video that you see today on BBC television? CCC television in China. The NFL is streaming games now online. It is through Akamai Technologies, this high-definition streaming. The algorithm was written at MIT. A man by the name of Tom Leighton was the professor at this time. He's now, by the way, the CEO of Akamai. But he was then MIT's professor. He set about his brightest students to write an algorithm for this powerhouse technology for video. A man by the name of Danny Lewin came up with the algorithm. I bet you that baby is about a mile long, giving this incredible quality to video that's used now by all of the big ones. Customers are Apple, Facebook, Bing, Twitter, eBay, you name it. Akamai Technologies are there. The man's name was Danny Lewin, who was just a student then. He was a billionaire in 3 years. And then something happened to him. He was on Flight 11, September 11th, that flew into the North Tower in 2001. And of course, there were no bodies found. So it doesn't matter if he was really even on the flight. Danny Lewin died. The professor, Tom Leighton, ended up with the algorithm, who is now the CEO of Akamai Technology. By the way, Akamai is a Hawaiian word meaning intelligent or witty. So you see the connection. Now, the NFL uses this technology, and they're using it to stream their games. And it's going to be the way of the future. No more cable television for the NFL. They're going to be the first move into this new Internet of all things space where we're moving to. No more television. Danny Lewin, the inventor, that brainy young man, dies September 11th on American Airlines Flight 11. Akamai Technologies now owns Uber. Akamai Technologies supplies all of the video for the NFL. Lyft is not allowed. They are banned from shunting anyone to Super Bowl 50. Pretty interesting, isn't it? How things work. I was just talking a few minutes ago about Apollo 14's mission. As one of the 12 men who supposedly walked on the moon died. Edgar Mitchell. He, along with Alan Shepard, were the two astronauts who collected those 45 kilograms of moon rocks from the moon surface that everybody is so thrilled about and brought them back to Earth for examination. And also have the supposed distinction, as I remarked earlier, of having completed the longest moonwalk in all of history. So, let me jog your memory once again, if I may. It was back in September of 2009 that the Dutch National Rijksmuseum in Amsterdam made an embarrassing announcement about one of their assets. It was about their moon rock, given to them and put on display in that very prestigious museum, that is the Dutch National Rijksmuseum, that was holding these precious moon rock, one of them, that was brought back to Earth supposedly by these men. This rock was once one of the museum's most prized possessions. But September of 2009, it all changed. The moon rock was actually proven to be fake. Yes, it was actually a fake. It was really just an old piece of petrified wood that's never been anywhere near the moon. So says the Dutch National Rijksmuseum. The Rijksmuseum, by the way, is famous for its fine art collections, especially paintings by Rembrandt, other masters. One of its lesser known objects, the moon rock, first unveiled October 2006 as the centerpiece of a Fly Me to the Moon exhibition. At that time, the museum said the rock symbolized the exploration of the unknown, colonization of faraway places, and bringing back treasures from those places. A reading about the moon rock was even held on October 7th at the museum because it was a full moon. The rock was given as a private gift to former Prime Minister Willem Drees Jr. in 1969 by the U.S. Ambassador to the Netherlands at that time, J. William Middendorf II, during a visit by the Apollo 11 astronauts. Armstrong was there, Collins was there, Aldrin, Buzz Aldrin was there. Drees, the former Prime Minister of Holland, had been out of office for 11 years, but was considered an elder statesman. When Dries died in 88, the rock, the moon rock, the fake moon rock, was actually, they didn't know it then, was donated to the Rijksmuseum, where it remained ever since. And according to a museum spokeswoman, Ms. Van Gelder, No one doubted the authenticity of the rock because it was the Prime Minister's own collection that it came from. And they had vetted the acquisition by a phone call to NASA. According to Rijksmuseum, at one time the rock was insured actually for approximately $500,000, but its actual value is no more than around $70 American. Former U.S. Ambassador Middendorf was unable to recall the exact details, he said, of how the rock came to be in the U.S. State Department's possession. It is known that NASA gave lunar rocks to over 100 countries in the 1970s, but when the rock was displayed in 06, a space expert told the museum he doubted that any material would have been given away so soon after the manned lunar landing. The researchers from the Free University of Amsterdam immediately doubted the rock was even from the moon and began extensive testing. The tests concluded that the rock was, in fact, petrified wood. U.S. Embassy officials were unable to explain those findings. And even though the tests found the piece was not of lunar origin, the Rijksmuseum curators said they were going to keep it around anyway as a curiosity piece. The U.S. astronaut Edgar Mitchell was not only said to have brought home more than just moon rocks, telling reporters in the days after the mission, but he said he had experienced an epiphany in space and returned with an overwhelming sense of oneness, of connectedness. Years later, he wrote in his autobiography, "It occurred to me that the molecules of my body and the molecules of the spacecraft itself were manufactured long ago in the furnace of one of the ancient stars that burned in the heavens about me." Mitchell left NASA in 1972 and set up the Institute of Noetic Sciences, which aimed to support individual and collective transformation through consciousness research. Yeah, Edgar Mitchell was deeply into the occult. In 1974, he described his lunar epiphany to the New York Times this way. He said, "It was a sense of the Earth being in critical condition, a condition of the massive insanity which had led man into deeper and deeper crises on the planet. Above all, I felt the need for a radical change in our culture. I knew we were replete with untapped intuitive and psychic forces, which we must utilize if we are to survive. Forces that Western society had programmed us to disregard." Mitchell devoted a lot of his later life, by the way, to studying the mind and unexplained phenomena. In 2008, he actually claimed that aliens had visited Earth and said he believed there was a government cover-up. He said, "I happen to have been privileged enough to be in on the fact that we've been visited on this planet and the UFO phenomena is real." He told that to Kerrang Radio in 08. He also stated, "It's been well covered up by our governments for the last 60 years or so, but slowly it's leaked out and some of us have been privileged to have been briefed on some of it." It's a spaceman. It's a view from space. That's all it is. On Talk Radio AM 640.
I'm the guy to call space. This is a view from space. It's Talk Radio AM 640. Emails to spaceman at 640toronto.com or space at 640toronto.com. If you've got a critique of the show, if you've got a comment you'd like to make, or you've got some information you'd like to pass along, or if you just want to say where in the world you're listening to the show from, feel free. Either of those two addresses. So I've been talking a little bit about the Super Bowl, a little bit about numerology, a little bit about Chinese
input into this whole thing. Earthquakes, possible terrorism, launching its ugly specter in the next few hours. America needs a win these days, doesn't it? NASA needs a win more than anybody else. They haven't been in the space game for a while. They've had a few failures, too, to launch problems or explosions to their space vehicles just after liftoff. Meanwhile, their competitor, the European Space Agency, has successfully landed, they say, a deep space vehicle onto a comet. At least that's what they claim. Back in 2014, NASA got back into the rocket launching business. Yeah. It was the Orion Mission Delta IV heavy rocket launch. Only a test flight. But the long-term plan for this heavy rocket launch, I mean, this is one of those Russian-type, they can take a building, an apartment building, and throw it up 500 miles straight up. Well, maybe not quite that high, but at least 250. The Orion Mission Delta IV heavy rocket. 2014, took its maiden flight. Orion, you see, code for Zeus, code for Satan, is to be the new space shuttle exploration vehicle that'll carry the crew, not to just some International Space Station 250 or so miles straight up, but to deep space, they tell you. Provide emergency abort capability, sustain the crew during the space travel, and provide safe re-entry from deep space after the return. That's a lot to ask. If you can't even successfully get a rocket off the pad these days. You see what I mean by NASA and the black magic spell they cast? Now let me tell you, I go back a long way with this stuff. All rocket fuel really is amide, cornstarch, and ammonium nitrate bound together. That's it. It's that simple. But to find out the ingredients and the combination of amounts of each was the key. When Jack Parsons invented the rocket fuel, heavily into the occult, by the way, along with Hubbard, the inventor of Scientology, Parsons invented the rocket fuel that we use today, and he did it by simply substituting potassium nitrate with Dectin as a binding agent to ammonium nitrate. Presto! Rocket fuel was invented. He found out by risking it all, you know, trying things out. He found that ammonium nitrate worked better than potassium nitrate because when it sat overnight along with the temperature changes, the potassium nitrate became so dangerously combustible that it would blow up when it was loaded onto the vehicle. So I go back a long way with these guys. Anyway, they love the occult, and that's why the stars are named what they are. I think the stars are named after a royal family and its family members who had great power in the ancient times, in the earliest of man's history. The one they call Zeus in Greek myths is the family head. 2 Gemini constellation is Zeus. 2 Zeus' firstborn sons, the Gemini twins, Castor and Pollux. One died, the other was given everlasting life, we're told in the myths. The one who lived forever wanted to share his afterlife with his twin brother, so Zeus granted his wish. Castor and Pollux are twin cameramen in the final book of Suzanne Collins' The Hunger Games trilogy. And exactly like in the myth, Castor was killed and Pollux survived in the Hunger Games trilogy. Now, learn how the NASA mission fits into the Gemini constellation and the Orion constellation. Orion is, of course, a group of stars, constellation in the sky. And the Orion cluster is its brightest star, Rigel. It's known as a double star. Twins, get it? Castor and Pollux. The 14th century Greco-Persian astronomer Chrysokoka even named Rigel Pous and Dudemon. Pous, Dudemon, in Greek means twin or double, the twins. Rigel is the seventh brightest star in the sky. It glows both bluish and white in the left foot, again of the two, of the star constellation known as the Hunter, located in the western west foot of the Hunter Orion collection of stars. That is, right next to the Gemini constellation. This is from an old Greek history book. Near neighbor to the twins, Gemini, Orion may be stretching his arms over a vast expanse of sky and rising to the stars with no less huge a stride. A single light marks each of his shining shoulders, and three anslat trace the downward line of his sword. But three mark Orion's head, which is embedded in the high heavens with his countenance remote. It is Orion, who I think is really Zeus, who leads the constellations as they speed over the full circuit of heaven. Potential future missions for this Orion, NASA's latest foray into space, which is designed to fit four people at a time, include a trip to lasso an asteroid, and later a journey to Mars by the 2030s. So eventually putting men and women on Mars, the planet of war, is the message here from NASA. That's what you can take from that, the black magic spell. None of that can actually really happen. That's the spell cast. Who believes it and who doesn't? Because man is God now. Look what we can do. Interstellar travel. If man can do interstellar travel, then surely there is another race out there that can do it too. The aliens who will visit us soon. And they will be staged also. Believe me, they will. We were told that 2014's launch of the Orion's maiden flight of the Delta IV heavy rocket, the first step taken by man to land a person on the Mars, the U.S.-built vehicle Orion is the vehicle that's to carry men and women from Earth to Mars. Orion circled the Earth twice and reached a maximum altitude in its test flight of about 3,600 clicks, more than eight times the height of which the International Space Station orbits at between 430 and 440 kilometers straight up. I don't believe it for a moment that rocket ever did that, but that's what they say. Along the way, its onboard electronics had to have weathered passage through two radiation belts where high-energy particles are trapped by Earth's magnetic field. The Van Allen belt. You can't get through that radiation. Space Bag with more. Flip side of the break on Talk Radio AM 640. It's AVFS. I'm the Spaceman. It's Talk Radio AM 640. This is AVFS. Please direct your emails to spaceman at 640toronto.com or space at 640toronto.com. That's how you and I communicate, and I thank you for the one I've received from you. So, I'm persistent. I don't think we ever went to the moon, number one. And I think there are really two plans involving this interstellar travel, this outer space, in effect, that are being run by NASA. One is the real one, and the other is the cover-up for the real one. The real one is the near-Earth orbit monitoring program from all four corners of the Earth, therefore covering all, with satellites that spy visually and audibly. I also believe there are a weapons platform or two or many complexes being built in the near-Earth orbit, which is about 450 clicks above the Earth. And I believe that's been kept top secret, super confidential. And as usual, on a need-to-know basis. It's exactly how Steve Jobs ran Apple. Not only are there satellite lookout stations to monitor the Earth's troop movements, say, for instance, or even intelligence gathering or eavesdropping electronically covering all four corners of the Earth, overtly spying. That's the top secret plan. Very few realize this is the real plan. The surveillance society from high above Earth. The other plan is the one that they feed you and I through the media and the movies. It's the fantasy one, the fantasy plan for us, the people who get us to the project for the good of all mankind and make us pay for it. And say they're going to Saturn or they're going to Mars and make you and I pay for it, but it's actually a prison, a fortress they're building. Outside of the Earth's atmosphere, just outside of the Earth's orbit. But it's always for our own good. Notice? When it's not really. It's for the elite's dream. No, quest. This fantasy plan is the one that they will tell the people of the world where all the money's being spent goes. Where all the money in the world being spent on going to Mars, doing experiments in space. But the secret plan is actually the plan of surveillance, weaponry-based platforms in near-Earth orbit. Here's what NASA says about the controlled landing of that Orion capsule a couple of years ago, the heavy lift rocket. When Orion plunged back down the atmosphere at 32,000 clicks per hour, it relied solely on its heat shield to avoid burning up during the high-speed reentry. And as a final test, the capsule's parachute needed to deploy at the right moment to bring in a relatively gentle splashdown of the Pacific. About 1,000 clicks off the coast of Baja California, we're told. The capsule floated until it was recovered by the USS Anchorage. The Illuminati Black Magic scientists have now come full circle in their fake history. That's right, their lying black magic spell of interstellar travel meant to deceive the public about the ability to fly to other worlds is totally bogus. The Americans have been resorting to going back to the old Apollo moonshot space program days for another shot at resurrecting this hoax of putting man on some other planet or asteroid. The Russians and the Americans are now at odds. The Americans have given up their ISS program. The shuttles. They don't have a way to get up to the International Space Station any longer. Without help from Russia, since the shuttle system has been scrapped, it's the Russians now who are lifting up the crews and restocking the International Space Station, or doing whatever they're doing up there as an international consortium. The Americans and Russians are not politically on the same side any longer. They have never really been. But the ones that run the country are on the same side, same bloodline members, in fact. Even when the Berlin Wall fell, purely symbolic, not really at all, since it's not sincere at all. Another lie the Illuminati wanted you to believe. Listen carefully to this. The next flight of the Orion program is supposedly to fly to the far side of the moon sometime around, well, next year, or the year after, 2017 or 2018. Again, uncrewed. No man aboard. Yes, the dark side of the moon. They'll fake this. They'll put videos up of animations via computer. And you, of course, or many will, buy it, saying, oh yeah, they can do that now. Well, we went to the moon years ago. Well, now we just got a big, big, strong rocket that takes us to the other side of the moon now. You, of course, heard about the one-way trip to Mars. The brainchild of a Dutch entrepreneur, Bas Landrup. Yeah, auditions for a one-way trip to Mars. You're never coming back. They've had, well, they say, they've had people from 100 different countries wanting to sign up. You can say what you want. Believing it is another story. The working plan right now for this phony hoax is for a crew of four to part every couple of years starting in 2024, for the first groups arriving in 2025. The Mars One group website even says the first four settlers would be followed by more groups every couple of years. At first, the home base would be limited to provisions, oxygen, and water, but would eventually expand to everything the settlers might need, including the solar panels. Hey, that's a very aggressive undertaking, wouldn't you say? I mean, supposedly even just orbiting the moon is still a long way from a trip to Mars. I mean, there are people who believe we went to the moon, but they can't tell you how many times we supposedly did. Now, beginning July 20th, 1969, with Neil Armstrong, Buzz Aldrin, Apollo 11, and ending on December 14th, 1972, with Gene Cernan and Jack Schmidt on Apollo 17, the moon missions. But reoccupying this unprecedented success of the lunar proving ground for landings will be another essential milestone before NASA is even close to being ready to send an astronaut to explore new territory among the asteroids and beyond. But for the black magic spell to take, to be believed, it's essential that NASA taps into those distant past lunar lander hoaxes and stories, successes, to reignite this new endeavor to put man on, firstly, an asteroid, and then to put men and women on Mars, a planet of war. Get it? I'll say it one more time for you. Man arriving on the planet of war. World War III is a shared goal of the two Illuminati-controlled combatants, the superpowers, the United States and Russia. Can it be made any more clear to you? The United States earlier said it would keep the International Space Station running until at least 2024. But you know what Russia has said? They're looking to go it alone, create their own orbital station. Europe's European Space Agency and Russia are also working on a couple of Mission ExoMars probe shots to the war planet. You see, not only is American Illuminati members set on going to the war planet, so is Europe, so is Russia. There's your World War III combatants right there in the magic spell, all headed to the same place. War. Mars. Listen to this one. Recently, Britain has lent Tilfred, the headless Greek statue of Ilyasos, the river god, to the Russians under protest from the Greeks. More on that when I come back on this radio show called AVFS. It's a spaceman. This is AM 640. More next.
I'm the spaceman. This is AVFS on Talk Radio AM 640. Emails, please, direct them to spaceman@640toronto.com or space@640toronto.com. Thank you for the one you sent. I really appreciate it. I honestly do.
Now, as I was saying before the break, that the Russians and the Americans and Britain, really, who are figuring heavily into this because they are the mother nation to all of the world, and the bloodline members, the highest ranking bloodline members, are in Britain. Well, they are above politics. Royalty has always been above politics and use politics to get their way. So the combatants of Russia, Europe, and America, all on a footing to go to war, Mars, in this illusion. Meanwhile, the elites that are above politics, lends Pilfred, the headless Greek statue of Ilyasos, the river god, to the Russians under protest from the Greeks. It was called a show of power that art should rise above politics. But the real truth is that Eliso, the river god, son of Poseidon and Demetra, named after a river making a boundary of the ancient city of Athens, is in fact a code signal for war. So how, do you ask? Eliso, a river god, and a river of Attica, is taken from Ilium, an ancient name for the city of Troy. Hence, we get the word Iliad. Iliad means war. The Iliad tells the beginning of the Trojan War and the fall of Troy to the Greeks. You see, there is nothing new under the sun. It's simply history repeating itself. There's also the extraterrestrial aspect of this NASA Delta IV heavy rocket launch, this test. The constellation Orion is the place I've said before, and still believed to be that the alien contact will come when man and alien acknowledge each other's existence. It'll come from that area of the sky, that part of space that we are now talking of and traveling to, they say. It's that area of space that includes the Orion constellation and the dog star Sirius. The Illuminati think this is one of the most magical tricks in all the heavens. And remember, the red monkey is a trickster. The year 2016, the year of the red monkey. That is, Orion's belt points to Sirius, the dog star. Sirius is the brightest star in the nighttime sky. It's up before dawn now, but we'll be shifting into the evening sky as the months pass. Orion is found in the pre-dawn morning sky every September. You can easily find Orion if you go outside. Simply look south to southeast before dawn now, and you'll notice Orion's belt, which is made up of a short, straight row of medium bright stars. Simply draw a line through Orion's belt and extend that line towards the horizon. You easily spot Sirius, the dog star, the sky's brightest star, the most meaningful star to the ancient pharaohs in ancient Egypt, that figures prominently and the ancient Egyptian mystery religion that will become the new religion when the new world order is in place. From that place, Sirius, will come an alien contact, believe me. Yes. The Orion civilization was one of the very few supposedly to evolve into a state of technological advancement while still being in a state of spiritual conflict. In the myths of the Orion conflict, there were two groups. The negative side, who believed in the concept of serving the self, and they believed if they served the self, the whole would be served. This translates into seeking domination over others. The more positive spiritual side held the ideal of being of service to others. Does this sound familiar? Have you ever done research on the myth of Atlantis? It is the exact same conflict that occurred in Atlantis between the sons of Belial and the Law of One, as they're known. It's the exact same conflict that occurs in our present world today. Do you serve self, the ego, or do you serve others? This Orion conflict played out for eons of time in a most destructive and disturbing way. There were supposedly three groups that formed. These three groups were the dominators, the victims, the resistance. The dominators were the Orion Empire. The Black League was the resistance to the evil domination of the Empire. Does this sound familiar at all? It's the movie Star Wars, actually based on this Orion conflict. More on this myth was shown to you in the Star Wars flick's latest installment, the seventh in that series. It was just released, called The Force Awakens. Set approximately 30 years, the royal number, after the events of The Return of the Jedi first released in 83. The evil empire attempted to dominate mentally, emotionally, technologically, and even devised ways to control using psychic powers for evil purposes. That's what Edgar Mitchell was talking about and what he delved into after he spun the black magic occult lie, that spell of men going to the moon, about men and the power of the mind over others. There was apparently a great spiritual avatar that came forward and awakened the Orion people to the law of love and forgiveness. And this facilitated the beginning of a mass awakening for the civilization. This is what we're in for now. There are parts of the Orion system that have awakened, the Illuminati believe, and parts that are still trying to dominate. One of those still trying to dominate in the Orion system is the reptilian race, the ones I call the Illuminati. There's more on this struggle that repeats itself through time. Next on Talk Radio AM 640, this is AVFS from space. I'm the guy to call space. It's Talk Radio AM 640. Please, if you care to email, it's space at 640toronto.com or spaceman at 640toronto.com. Now, as I was saying before the break, movie Star Wars, The Force Awakens, is really about this conflict that I've been talking about, the three groups that formed. The dominators, the victims, the resistance. The dominators were the Orion Empire. The Black League was the resistance of the evil domination of the Empire. Do you get it? So it's exactly what's going on here on Earth. And there is going to be a spiritual avatar, the Antichrist, that will come forward and awaken the people, just as that avatar awakened the Orion people to the law of love and forgiveness. That facilitated the beginning of a mass awakening for the civilization. We're going to go through this again, too. There are parts of the Orion system, the Illuminati believe, that have awakened and are still trying to dominate. And one of those still trying to dominate is that reptilian race I call the Illuminati. The positive Orions that are visiting the Earth are contributing their advanced mental powers of the development of smoothly running systems of organization on Earth. The Illuminati believe that these Orions vibrate and resonate to the color yellow and beam this frequency to Earth for the purpose of stabilizing the intuitive powers within the human conscious mind. That's contacting demons, the Illuminati's gods. The Ashtar Command supposedly serves in a way like to be heaven's policeman, they believe. And there are actually six planets in the Orion system, plus a group called the Deros from Orion inner space that have had to be completely cordoned off. So the Illuminati are very tentative about anything to do with the Orion Nebula. There's been speculation that the Mayans of Central America may have described the nebula within their three hearthstones creation myth. The three would correspond to two stars at the base of Orion, Regal and Scythe. And another, Elnatak, at the tip of the belt of the imagined hunter, the vertices of a nearly perfect equilateral triangle. Three sides. Three. The perfect number. Affording a perfect shape, according to the Illuminati, with Orion's sword, including the Orion Nebula, in the middle of the triangle, seen as the smudge of smoke from copal incense in a modern myth, or, in the translation, it suggests of an ancient one, the literal or figurative embers of a fiery creation, the all-seeing eye. Neither Ptolemy's Almagest, nor Al-Sufi's books of fixed stars even mentioned this nebula, even though they both listed patches of nebulosity elsewhere in the night sky. Nor did Galileo mention it, even though he also made telescopic observations surrounding it in 1610, and then again in 1617. This has led to some speculation that a flare-up of the illuminating stars may have increased the brightness of the nebula, because a light has now been, well, spotted. The first discovery of this diffuse nebulous nature of the Orion Nebula is usually credited to French astronomer Nicolas Claude Fabry de Pierrezec on the 26th of November 1610, when he made a record of observing it with a refracting telescope purchased by his fellow colleague Guillaume Duverre. The first published observation of this nebula was by the Jesuit mathematician and astronomer Johann Baptiste Cézanne of Lucerne in his 1619 monograph on the comets, describing observations of the nebula that would date back to as far as 1611. He made comparisons between it and a bright comet seen in 1618 and described how the nebula actually appeared through his telescope as, in his words, one sees how how in like manner some stars are compressed into a very narrow space, and how round about and between the stars a white light like that of a white cloud is poured out. His description of the center stars is different from a comet's head in that they were a rectangle. May have been an earlier description of what's known as the trapezium cluster. The first detection of three of the four stars in this cluster is credited to Galileo in 1617, although he didn't notice the surrounding nebula. Was it because of the narrow field of vision of the early telescopes? Is that what the official excuse is? The nebula was independently discovered by several other prominent astronomers in the years that followed. In 1656, Christian Huygens, whose sketch was the first published in 1659, Charles Messier first noticed the nebula in 1769, and he also noticed three of the stars in the trapezium. Messier published the first edition of this catalog of deep sky objects in 1744, as the Orion Nebula was the 42nd object in his list. So it became identified as M42. Yeah, an interesting number, isn't it? When you understand that numerology is one of the Illuminati's greatest guides, and M, the 13th letter in the alphabet, is one of the Illuminati's marks of the cult's presence. It means reincarnation. It means everlasting life. And the number 42, of course, needs no explanation, I'm sure, here on Talk Radio AM 640 on a show like AVFS. 42 degrees is the number at which the white light is broken up into different colors, and magically, a rainbow appears. Step out of the 42-degree angle, and the rainbow disappears. Because a rainbow is an optical and meteorological phenomenon that is caused by both reflection and refraction of pure white light in water droplets using a spectrum of light appearing in the sky. It takes the form of a royal arc, if you like. 42 degrees. White light is broken up into different colors. Refracted. Broken apart. The true God, white light. Satan, 42 degrees. Breaks it all up. Step out of that satanic moment of 42 degrees, and the true God is back. White light. That's why Jackie Robinson got the number 42 in Major League Baseball to break the color barrier. He smashed the white light and broke it up into colors. Back to light of a different kind, the Orion Nebula. Henry Draper's 1880 photograph of the Orion Nebula is the first ever taken, by the way. One of Andrew Ainslie Common's 1883 photographs of the Orion Nebula was supposedly the very first to show that a long exposure could record new stars and nebulae invisible to the human eye. In 1865, English amateur astronomer William Huggins, used his vision spectroscopy method to examine the nebula, showing it. Like other nebulae he had examined, was made up of luminous gas, he said. 1880, Henry Draper used the new dry plate photographic process. Refracting telescope to make a 51-minute exposure of the Orion Nebula, the first instance of astrophotography of a nebula in history, we're told. Another set of photographs of the nebula in 1883 saw a breakthrough in astronomical photography when amateur astronomer Andrew Common used the dry plate process to record a bunch of images in exposures up to 60 minutes with a 36-inch reflecting telescope that he constructed in his backyard of his home in Ealing outside of London, England. These images, for the first time, were purported to show stars and nebula detailed too faint to be seen by the human eye. So what we're getting into here is, you see, machines doctoring what you see. Today, it's incredible what they can do with computer-driven technology. They can actually land a craft on Saturn. Slip it through the rings and land it on Saturn and make you believe it with the imagery that they have. Because you see, without their gizmos, without their magical equipment, they can't produce this stuff. They can't make up the lies. And they can't have these lies ever evolve with newer and newer technology that better and better fools all of us. Unwashed. Us. Uninitiated. Into the black magic spell of the deception of what is in outer space. Fascinating, isn't it? 1902, Vogel, Nebhard, discover differing velocities with the nebula. And by 1914, astronomers at Marseille had used the interferometer to detect rotation and irregular motions. Campbell and Moore confirmed these results using the spectrograph, demonstrating turbulence within the nebula. And later, 1931, Robbie Trumler noticed that the fainter stars near the trapezium formed a cluster. And he was the first to name them the trapezium cluster. Here we go. Perpetuating and stretching and making the lie even bigger. But if you look into the sky right now, you can't see any of what I've been talking about. You need to look through there. Looking glass, Alice. It's a Spaceman Talk Radio, AM 640. This is AVFS. Please direct your emails to spaceman@640toronto.com or space@640toronto.com. I sincerely appreciate every single one I've got tonight. Some very valuable information. Some very funny, and some that are just, well, out of this world. But I've been talking about, well, let me put it this way, Alice's looking glass. And you know, of course, Alice looking through the looking glass was on drugs and had a distorted view of things. Well, the drug is science / black magic for the masses. And the looking glass is the new inventions of these telescopes that can take the eye and see more than, well, is really out there. I've taken you through the history up to the 30s and the 50s. And now in 1993, the Hubble Space Telescope first observed the Orion Nebula, where we're going to get interstellar contact from. Since then, the nebula has been a frequent target for the Hubble Space Telescope, you know. The images have been used to build a detailed model of the nebula in three dimensions now. Protoplanetary disks have even been observed around most of the newly formed stars in the nebula. And the destructive effects of high levels of ultraviolet energy, we're told, from the most massive stars have even been studied. Thanks to the new black magic looking glass spell caster, the Hubble Space Telescope. In 2005, the advanced camera for surveys instrument of the Hubble Space Telescope, finished capturing the most detailed image yet of the nebula ever taken, we're told. The image was taken through 104 orbits of the telescope, capturing over 3,000 stars down to the 23rd magnitude, including infant brown dwarfs and possible brown dwarf binary stars. A year later, scientists working with the HST, the Hubble Space Telescope, announced their first ever masses of a pair of eclipsing binary brown dwarfs. Yes! You know, they're getting you ready for alien contact. The Illuminati aren't looking for lights. They're setting you up for ET. Extraterrestrials. They believe the extraterrestrials are their relatives, and they're going to show you them. So they've gone about making this reality, not fantasy. It was 1972. Not long ago, was it? A scale of measurement was even established for when there are to be alien encounters. For instance, they are. When a UFO is sighted, it's called an encounter of the first kind. When evidence is collected, it's known as an encounter of the second kind. When contact is made with extraterrestrials, this is the third kind. Abduction, the fourth kind. The encounter, abduction, has been the most difficult to document. According to Hynek's classification system, a close encounter of its first kind is the sighting, 500 feet or less away, of an unidentified flying object, odd lights, or an aerial object that is maneuvering or otherwise displaying characteristics that are not possible with terrestrial technology. A close encounter of the second kind is a sighting of a UFO that leaves some physical trace of its presence. These could take the form of either measurable heat, radiation, damage on the observer or damage to the immediate terrain, and its flora or animals. Incidences of human paralysis or inexplicable frightened or agitated animals, as well as the interference of radio and television reception, fall into that category. The phenomena of lost time associated with the UFO sighting is also part of the second kind encounter. And due to Steven Spielberg's famous black magic / occult science movie, close encounters of the third kind are, of course, the most well known. This encounter scenario is where the witness actually observes animate beings in association with the sighted UFO. The guy who made this little bit of bunch of rules up himself didn't even wish to use the term alien, as there was no way to rule out the possibility that beings were actually seen as humans, as opposed to automatically assuming they were, well, of extraterrestrial origin. And others have added extra classifications along after Mr. Hynek to this list, although not all ufologists universally accept them. Ted Blocher added 7 more potential categories, although they're the mostly subsets of the major classifications, and 3 do not particularly pertain to UFOs or aliens at all, even. Of most accepted of these additional classifications, that's added to the close encounters of the fourth kind. And the fourth close encounter category is the actual abduction of a human by alien beings. The close encounters of the fifth kind classification, proposed by Steve Greer, the founder of the Center for the Study of Extraterrestrial Intelligence. These encounters are ones mutually arrived at with a conscious and deliberate purpose by both the human and the alien for the purposes of communication. These contactee encounters were considered to have begun sometime in the 1950s and supposedly continue along with the less planned encounters to this very day. A newly published book and a retired NORAD officer by a guy that was working at NORAD predicted October 13th, 2010 would be the tentative date for a fleet of extraterrestrial vehicles to hover for hours over the Earth's principal cities. The author said that the event was to be the first in a series of intended activity to avert a planetary catastrophe resulting from increasing levels of carbon dioxide in the Earth's atmosphere, dangerously approaching critical mass, climate change. The aliens are going to say, hey, you reckon the universe here, lay off here. September 13th, that year, 2010. A newly published 352-page book by a retired Air Force officer, Stanley Fulham, tentatively predicted October 13th, 2010, as well as the date for the massive UFO display over the world's principal cities. According to this author, the aliens would neither land nor communicate on that date, but they were aware from the eons of experience with other planets in similar conditions, their sudden intervention would cause fear and panic to us all. Next, the book Challenges of Change reported this event to be the initial interaction of a process that, when I return on Talk Radio AM 640. It's a Spaceman. More right after this break.
We got to call space. It's a view from space. It's Talk Radio AM 640. Emails to spaceman at 640toronto.com or space at 640toronto.com. So you see how we are growing through the years via new technology to open our eyes to what's out in outer space. And now we even are being set up with types of encounters. And then the book Challenges of Change reports the event that was supposedly to take place October 13, 2010 would be the initial interaction in a process leading to mankind's acceptance of the alien reality and technologies for the removal of poisonous gases from the Earth's atmosphere. The author drew his military experience with the UFO phenomenon dating back to World War II and later, because Stanley Fulham was a pilot in World War II, and with NORAD later, and his subsequent lifelong association with senior NORAD intelligence officers who provided him with what he calls a wealth of historical data relating to NORAD's experience with the UFO alien reality, which has never really, really ever been revealed to the public. In the military's view, as conveyed to and understood by Stevie Fulham, the public is not yet ready to accept an alien reality. Brace yourself. Here it comes. What I've been saying for a long while now, the new religion is a mix of science and black magic. Man is God.
Frum wrote that it's generally recognized UFOs function beyond our Earth's physical laws and has concluded answers to questions examining who they are, where they're from, why they're here, are they a threat, and the mystery of abductions could only be found on a higher dimension of reality. For more than a decade, through the services of a world-famous channeler into the occult, the author has communicated with the ethereal group of entities known as the Transcenders. Now we're talking demonic association. He calls them 43,000 very old souls. Why 43,000? Because 4 and the 3 is 7, and 7 is the number of spirit. Anyway, they combine their vast experience, these 43,000 very old souls, and all of their knowledge through eons of incarnations, and provided him advice, and information to humans in search of basic realities of mankind's existence, he said. The book Challenges of Change actually is a log of the author's years of communication with these demons, or transcenders as he calls them, in a question and answer format intended to inform and challenge, or actually to brainwash you, to bring you over to the dark side. The transcenders reveal through the author crucial information, he says, about urgent global challenges facing mankind, like changes in Earth's climate, international terrorism, worldwide financial collapse, the environmental crisis, as I just mentioned. One revelation is that ISIS will soon get a dirty nuclear bomb, but faces a moral quandary over containment of collateral damages. Utilizing the theme that's in the King James Version of the Bible, the four horsemen is the apocalyptic horsemen as symbolic metaphor. Frum warns mankind will survive all of these future challenges except the carbon dioxide pollution of our atmosphere. Climate change. According to information provided by the author, by the transcenders, this buildup of carbon dioxide pollution is rising 1% annually to a critical mass of 22%, in which mankind will not be able to survive without outside intervention. This is why the Paris climate change meeting made everyone legally binding to fines on how much carbon dioxide that they put into the air. According to Fulham, the transcenders state that they have borne witness to countless thousands of alien civilizations who've polluted their planets to total extinction, where not a single being, not a single animal, not a single plant survived. They urgently warn planet Earth is presently on the same destructive path. Fulham reports the aliens are well aware of our environmental crisis and have benevolently decided to rescue mankind in this vast universal drama. Stephen Fulham has been in contact with a distinguished foreign ambassador, he said, who read the book with great interest and dispatched it to his home government, where it was translated, studied by hundreds of their top government officials. And Fulham actually clarifies that there's no absolutes. The principle of free will and choice that exists with all souls precludes all absolute realities, and the alien may decide to postpone their intervention. But the transcenders, the demonic spirits he contacts, confirm it will nonetheless occur very soon. Quoting the author, The event will soon, in what will surely be one of the great dramas of our galaxy, I'm sure, the introduction of their alien civilizations and technologies to mankind. We are not alone, and our world will have changed forever. Edmund Halley, discoverer of Halley's Comet, sees UFOs in 1676 in the UK. Yeah, Edmund Halley, the astronomer who discovered Halley's Comet, can recall two accounts involving unidentified crafts. His first experience, March of 1676, when he saw, as he said, vast body apparently bigger than the moon. He estimated it at 40 miles above him. He also stated that it made a noise, like the rattling of a great cart over stones. After estimating the distance it traveled in a matter of minutes, he came to the conclusion that it moved at a speed of more than 9,600 miles an hour. Clyde Tombaugh was the American astronomer who discovered the planet Pluto. Not a dwarf planet, we're looking for the ninth. They think they found it's planet X, covered it last week. On August 20, 1949, he observed a UFO that appeared as a geometrically arranged group of 6 to 8 rectangles of light, window-like in appearance, and yellowish and green in color, which moved from the northwest to the southeast over Las Cruces, New Mexico. Tombaugh stated, "It's probably the person recognizes the academic world as having paramount rank, dignity, and importance, being the most outstanding supreme astronomer to date to have reported seeing unidentified flying objects." The year was 1949. Tombaugh claimed he saw several UFOs near Las Cruces, Mexico, New Mexico. He described them as 6 to 8 rectangular lights, stating, "I doubt that phenomenon was any terrestrial reflection because nothing of the kind has ever appeared before or since. I was so unprepared," he said, "for such a strange sight that I was really petrified with astonishment." Tombaugh was also later to report of seeing 3 of the mysterious green fireballs which suddenly appeared over New Mexico in the late 1948 year and continued at least through the early 1950s. In 1956, Tombaugh said this about his various sightings: "I have seen 3 objects in the last 7 years which defied any explanation of known phenomena, like Venus, atmospheric optic, meteors, or planes. I'm a professional, a highly skilled professional astronomer. In addition, I have seen 3 green fireballs which were unusual in behavior from normal green fireballs. I think that several reputable scientists are being unscientific in refusing to entertain the possibility of extraterrestrial origin and nature." In 1949, Clyde Tombaugh had also told the Naval Missile Director at White Sands Missile Range, Commander Robert McLaughlin, that he had seen a bright flash on Mars in the year of 1941, in the month of August, which he now attributes to an atomic blast. Tombaugh also noted that the first atomic bomb tested in New Mexico would have lit up the dark side of the Earth like a neon sign, and that Mars was coincidentally quite close at the time, the implication apparently being that the atomic test would have been, well, visible from Mars. Space, AM 640, back with more next.
I'm the guy to call space. It's View from Space. Talk radio, AM 640. Like to communicate with me? Something on your mind? Just like to say where in the world you're listening to the show from?
feel free. Spaceman@640toronto.com or space@640toronto.com. Okay, talked about the astronomers with their new Alice's looking glass to find the new truths that are out there. How about from the right stuff? The guys that, well, supposedly have been out there, and what they see. Gordon Cooper was one of the elite band of test pilots at Edwards Air Force Base, California, in charge of several advanced projects, including the installation of a precision landing system. This is before the faked moon landing. National Advisory Committee for Aeronautics was a U.S. federal agency founded in 1915 to undertake, promote, and institutionalize aeronautical research. In 1958, the agency was dissolved. Assets, personnel, transferred to the newly created National Aeronautics and Space Administration, whom we know now as NASA. You know the phrase, of course. NASA only looks for men with the right stuff. Having the right stuff means that you do not think and only follow orders. And you'll take a secret to the grave. Here's Gordon Cooper's story. He says, I had a camera crew filming the installation when they spotted a saucer. They filmed it as it flew overhead, then hovered, extended three legs as landing gear, and slowly came down to land on a dirty lake bed. He goes on to say these guys were all pro cameramen, so the picture quality was very, very good. The camera crew managed to get within 20 or 30 yards of it, filming all the time. It was a classic saucer, shiny silver and smooth, about 30 feet across, Cooper said. It was pretty clear it was an alien craft. As they approached closer, took off. Then his camera crew handed over the film. Cooper followed the standard procedure and contacted Washington to report the UFO. And all hell broke loose, he said. Cooper says after a while, a high-ranking officer said when the film was developed, I was to put it in a pouch and send it to Washington. He didn't say anything about me not looking at the film. That's what I did when it came back from the lab. And it was all there, just like the camera crew reported. When the Air Force later started Operation Blue Book to collect UFO evidence and reports, Cooper says he mentioned the film evidence and stated, but the film was never found, supposedly. Blue Book was strictly a cover-up anyway. Cooper also revealed that he was convinced an alien craft crashed at Roswell, New Mexico, in 1947, and aliens were discovered on that wreckage. Here's what he said about the Roswell story. I had a good friend at Roswell, a fellow officer. He had to be careful about what he said. It sure wasn't a weather balloon like the Air Force cover story. He made it clear to me what crashed was a craft of alien origin and members of the crew were recovered. Why has the government kept the UFO secrets for so many years? It started in World War II, he said, when the government didn't want people to know about UFO reports in case they panicked. Says Cooper. They would have been fearful. It was a superior enemy. A superior technology that we had no defense against. Then it got worse in the Cold War for the same reason. So they told one untruth, and they had to tell another to cover that one up. Then another, and then another. It just snowballed, he said. And right now I'm convinced a lot of very embarrassed government officials are sitting there in Washington trying to figure out a way to bring the truth out. They know it's got to come out one day, and I'm sure it will. America has a right to know, Cooper said. Gordon Cooper isn't the only astronaut to push the UFO hoax. Astronaut Buzz Aldrin tells the story of the Apollo 11 UFO encounter of July 18th, 1969. You heard this one? I ran on the Science Channel a while back. Program called First on the Moon. Oh, they keep telling the story. The untold story was aired on the Science Channel. About 14 minutes and 30 seconds into the program, there was a 3.5 minute segment that described a UFO encounter that Apollo 11 experienced during its flight to the moon. The first time that Buzz Aldrin and Apollo 11 astronaut and lunar module pilot had ever publicly told any UFO experience associated with the Apollo 11 moon mission. Also of interest, I wonder how the UFO footage that was supposedly taken from a later Apollo mission was obtained. 3 days and 200,000 miles into the flight of Apollo 11, we're told, mission control supposedly misses the significance of a cryptic message sent from Apollo 11. We're told the conversation went this way. Apollo 11 states to mission control, "Do you have any idea where the SIVB is with respect to us?" Mission control answers, "Stand by. The crew requires information on the current position of the SIVB. That's the final stage of the rocket carrying Apollo 11, which had been jettisoned away, you know, a two-stage rocket, a couple of days earlier, and shouldn't be visible to them 2 days later." This short message was supposed to have hit an extraordinary turn of events, meaning Apollo 11 wasn't alone in space. I'll continue that story on Talk Radio AM 640 right after this break. I'm a spaceman at Talk Radio AM 640. Emails to spaceman@640toronto.com or space@640toronto.com. So I was telling the story about Buzz Aldrin, Apollo 11 astronaut, lunar module pilot also, has never really publicly told of any UFO experience associated with Apollo 11 mission. But the idea went like this. They look out the window. Buzz Aldrin sees something, thinks, well, the only thing it could be is the second stage of this rocket, but that was 2 days ago. How could it still be out there? So he asked Mission Control if they had any idea what that was. Mission Control says, stand by. The crew required information on the current position of the unidentified flying, whatever it was, to see if it was actually the final stage of that rocket carrying Apollo 11, which had been jettisoned 2 days earlier and should not be visible to them at all by then. This short message was supposed to have hit an extraordinary turn of events, meaning Apollo 11 wasn't alone in space. Aldrin says there was something out there that was close enough to be observed, and what could it be? The story goes that traveling alongside of Apollo 11 was this mysterious object, a ringed object at close range. It was supposedly to have been filmed on a later mission. If it wasn't part of their own rocket, so it could only be one other thing, a UFO. Aldrin said Mike Collins decided he thought he could see it in the telescope. And he was able to do that, and when it was in one position, they had a series of ellipses. But when you make it real sharp, it was sort of L-shaped. That didn't tell us very much. Dr. David Baker, Apollo 11 senior scientist, stated that NASA knew very little about the object reported by the Apollo 11 crew at the time, and it was obviously an unidentified flying object. Despite having a clear view of the UFO, the crew were wary of reporting it to mission control. Aldrin said, no, obviously the three of us weren't going to blurt anything out. Hey, Houston, we got something moving alongside of us and we don't know what it is. You know, can you tell us what it is? We weren't about to do that because we know those transmissions would be heard by all sorts of people. And who knows what somebody could have demanded that we turn back because of aliens or whatever the reason is. So we didn't do that. But we did decide we'd just cautiously ask Houston how far away our second stage that we jettisoned 2 days ago was. Mission Control was apparently unaware of this drama unfolding in space, and they radioed the position of the second stage. Mission Control, Apollo 11, Houston, your second stage is about 6,000 nautical miles from you now, over. Aldrin says, a few moments later, they didn't come back and said something like 6,000 miles away, but we really didn't think we were looking at something that far away. So we decided that after a while of watching it, it was time to go to sleep and not to talk about it anymore until we came back and went through debriefing. To this day, whatever it was that that crew saw has never been positively identified, officially acknowledged. You know, Jimmy Carter said he saw a UFO. Well, yeah, he did. The highest ranking political figure, a former president, said he saw one. Well, I say to you, get ready, because they're going to pull this trick. Oh, there's no doubt about it. Absolutely nothing is going to hold them back from this dream they have, this quest they're on. Yeah, get ready for it. And we can most definitely connect this new technology that they have that's designed to create devastation and catastrophic events on the Earth, that they will create a fake scenario, a hologram, if you like, a holographic image or images. And these images are virtual images, make no mistake about it, not real. But get ready for it, because they're going to have, well, deformed human beings, so grotesquely deformed, it will look like an alien. This is why we are getting into now and legalizing genetically modifying embryos. Get ready for it. It is coming. Governments cannot exist unless the people feel threatened. Unless the people feel that they need someone to guard them. The primary job of a government is to give you, the people, a false security of safety. For example, the United States was formed by a union of the United States for their mutual benefit and protection. The next step in evolvement will be the union of Mexico, Canada, and the U.S. here in North America. It will be called the North American Union. Already done in Europe. Already done all around the world. If not politically, business-wise, it has already been structured. All, of course, for our own protection. All, of course, to protect us from the man-made global financial crisis that's gripping the planet. In order to have a one-world government, you must take away the sovereignty of countries. In order to do that, you must first tear down all the national borders, all their laws. Then you must create enough fear in the world so that the citizens are willing to give up what they used to be loyal to and join together with neighbors, all done for everyone's own mutual protection. That's what's coming. That's what you're being set up for. Then, when the plan doesn't work, and each region of the world stands up against one another, pitted against one another, and is a currency war, the world is pushed into the brink of nuclear annihilation, because when countries go broke, they must mobilize, go to war, get on war footing, put everyone back to work for the war effort. Enter the alien threat, where the world must come together as one to fight the common enemy now. The attack from outer space. What better way to do that than if the Earth was attacked or invaded by some other species from some other planet, whether real or imagined? Just as Bill Cooper stated, the author of Build a Pale Horse, when asked about abductions, Cooper said this: "Look into the actual research and development of brainwashing and mind control techniques by the U.S., Great Britain, Canada, Soviet Union, and others. If you look at the mind control experiments and the actual lobotomies that were performed on people in hospitals, you'll see that this alien abduction thing is probably the most sophisticated and successful mind control operation ever conducted in the history of the world. And it's designed to make us believe that we're being threatened by some other species from some other planet so that they can have their one world government." Well, did you ever hear of John Dewey, 1917? Former President of the United States. What better way to unite all humanity in a one-world government than if we were attacked by some other species, by some other planet? That's what he said, 1917. By the way, Ronald Reagan also repeated this very same logic not many years ago. Bill Cooper was asked if the movie E.T. was based on a true story. He said, "If what I saw in government documents and naval intelligence is true, then yeah. If not, it's just another part of the conditioning of our collective consciousness to accept the reality of something that does not exist." Ultimately, I also believe that it is said in the Bible about the Nephilim, and as in the days of Noah, shall it be in the last days, and their little book of Enoch certainly helps their cause as well. Enoch, the black magician, was designed for those who wish to argue that there are aliens, and people like Eric von Daniken depend on Enoch to prove their points. That book is a fraud, just like von Daniken is. Even the Christians believe in that book. We are in those days. The world will not end, as some may want us to believe, though. And it certainly won't end with alien attacks. In the King James Version of the Bible, there are hundreds of descriptions of witnesses, from Moses to John, of glowing, flying objects, mechanical devices, a huge fleet of invading super vehicles, hyper-advanced weapons, and unearthly technology. Yet, not the slightest hint that such glaring evidence even exists from the pulpit. If the King James Version of the Bible said God drove a metallic chariot having four dark wheels, at night shining two white beams of fire in the front of the chariot and red glowing coals of fire in the back. Would that strike a chord of familiarity? If it made trumpet-like sounds when God wanted to gather together the people, if the four wheels spun underneath the chariot, moving it rapidly on the ground, each wheel appearing as a shiny wheel within a black wheel, and the wheels all moved together when the chariot moved over them, does that give you a hint? Back with more right after this short break. This is AVFS on Talk Radio AM 640.
Emails to spaceman at 640toronto.com or space at 640toronto.com. I'm Space. This is AVFS. Let me just recap what I was saying before the break. King James Version of the Bible said God drove a metallic chariot, four dark wheels, at night shining two white beams of fire in front of the chariot, and red glowing coals of fire in the back. Would that strike a chord of familiarity? If it made trumpet-like sounds when God wanted to gather the people, and if the four wheels spun underneath the chariot, moving it rapidly on the ground, each wheel appearing as a shiny wheel within a black wheel, and all the wheels all moved together when the chariot then moved, does that give you a hint? And if the front wheels turned when the firmament changed direction, but the real wheels turned not, and from the front was heard a great rumble, could that add to the recognition? If people got into and out of this chariot through that opened by touching shiny objects on the doors, and glass-like crystals moved up and down the doors, and music could be heard from inside the vehicle when the crystals were down, would that ring a bell? If God could be seen inside the firmament through a jewel-like transparent crystal, does it get clearer? And if parts of this description were repeated hundreds of times by many of the great figures of the Bible, would it sound strange if someone said that these descriptions sound as if God is traveling in a modern automobile? For instance, Jesus or Muhammad taken away in such a chariot. And we were told to watch and expect them to return in the same chariot. Wouldn't we expect him to drive up in an automobile? The King James Version of the Bible does not speak of an automobile, but it certainly does describe a metallic craft in the sky that spins, that takes off, that lands, and can hover for weeks. It appears cloud-like during the day, glows brightly at night, and can display an array of brilliant flashing lights, beams, and rays. It projects beams and fires projectiles that do serious damage to large armies, and can alter terrestrial and atmospheric conditions drastically. Men and shiny metal suited beings float up into it and down out of it. And the King James Version of the Bible says God flies in it and displays it so that men will know his power. Would it be strange if someone said such a description of an aerial vehicle would sound like a UFO? It is said that not only was Jesus taken into one, it very clearly says he will return in one along with the whole fleet of them, and even goes so far as to tell us which direction the fleet will be appearing from. Would it be strange
to suggest that Jesus said he would return to the earth in a fleet of UFO-like vehicles. I believe the Illuminati are going to mix science with black magic and make it to appear so. These writings are an attempt to open doors of perception, unlock the vault of secrets hidden from mankind by a power-hungry political and religious hierarchy. As long as the masses are kept blind to the truth, the oppressive hand of fear can lead them. And if they are shown the truth, they can lead themselves. Because truth is freedom. If we had truth, we would not appear to need the Illuminati and their false hope government business system. Freedom is the most serious threat the political system and religious system of the world are under now. They try to stamp it out at every opportunity. They base their entire belief system on the weakest of foundations. If you do what they say, you will live forever, blissfully in a paradise. But if you don't, you will suffer eternal torture and damnation in an eternal inferno deep in the earth somewhere. This is primitive fear. An incentive motivation, heavy on the fear. What if the true God didn't need a fancy house? Then how would they spend the building fund? What if the true God doesn't need somebody to spend great quantities of money trying to impress everybody that he's grander than some other gods? Then the preachers wouldn't need to be heard for much of their speaking. If he doesn't need somebody enforcing his rules, then how would the pulpit satisfy its addiction to power and control? If the true God has some real power that you can see, that you can feel, how could they justify claiming that they have the power and the judgment and not him? If the true God isn't what they say he is, then what God are they worshiping? What will those who say this God of these flying craft are satanically inspired images claiming to be Jesus and does exactly what is written in the King James Version of the Bible and comes flying in from the east with a fleet of these extraterrestrial vehicles? Remember, the deception is worldwide, not just confined to a few. It is mainstream, not hidden away somewhere. Is it possible the great deception mentioned in the King James Version of the Bible just might be the most obvious cover-up in history? What is most baffling about the Bible UFO debate is the way the pulpit handles the subject. They treat it like hazardous waste and cry satanic delusion. From the rooftops they scream it. Despite overwhelming and irrefutable facts contained in their own Bible, they find ridicule, condemnation, the only answer to a very serious question. Does God fly in some type of aerial vehicle? If you use the Bible as the source for the answer is a resounding yes. Not only does the King James Version of the Bible say he flies in an aerial vehicle, but he makes it a point that this aspect of his being is very important. It can be argued with authority, based on evidence from hundreds of scriptures, that to deny God travels in a very, very fast, very big, very powerful, spinning, glowing, metallic, flying vehicle is, in itself, a great deception. There's also a lot of the so-called evidence of an historical and current flying alien presence in our biosphere, coupled with marvels of ancient engineering and advanced technology throughout the world. Paranormal occurrences are reported on every continent. and in every culture. And the ancient texts are, well, replete with the out of place and the unexplained. The world isn't as simple as our religious and educational gurus would have us believe. Space. Back with more in a moment. Talk Radio AM 640.
The guy that calls Spaceman. This is a View from Space on Talk Radio AM 640. Final segment in tonight's show. So is alien disclosure imminent? Is that what we're being set up for?
Is the President of the United States going to announce it? Here's a scenario. Some date in the near future, broadcast on every major news television station, radio station, internet device in America, throughout the world. The American president, whoever that person is about to release disclosure on alien contact being made, which will in turn change virtually everything we know about the universe and our place in it, and religion. What will be announced? A comet or an asteroid strike being imminent? A new way to harness solar power to replace oil? Or about life being found on Mars? While all these scenarios are feasible, as possibly happening, the rumors on the internet are pointing to the American president being the first world leader to actually announce the intelligent alien life has been found. And confirmed. According to most accounts, once this president makes this ritual announcement, then other world leaders will come forward as confirming it. To make the news even more shocking, is that most of the rumors circulating on the internet mention nothing about the search for extraterrestrial intelligence being the one responsible for finding this alien life. The organization known as SETI. There are a number of different scenarios being played out on the internet concerning exactly what that announcement will contain. The most common ones mentioned, scenario one, U.S. president announces the presence of at least three alien species being known to us. Two of them being friendly, and one being seen as a threat. Scenario two. The sitting president does not reveal any alien species directly, but shows evidence of an ancient base being found on the moon's south pole. This mission was where an object was sent to deliberately crash into a deep crater on the moon where no sunlight could penetrate to see if it could detect any signs of frozen water. The announced results did, of course, show a good amount of frozen water in these craters, which would be a key in establishing a moon base. So, are we only a short time away from knowing the biggest mystery in all of human history? Or is this just another era of hype over nothing? One thing I've noticed about alien disclosure topics is that these stories appear to pop up every few years, and so far every one of them has resulted in nothing more than talk. But I believe the world's population has never been more ready, more brainwashed, and ready to accept this immense dark lie. Ready to hear some real news, if there is any, of course. And I think I can safely say that the average earthling feels they've waited long enough to see and waited long enough to hear that aliens actually exist, and most very much now actually want to see one. Yes, we're always hearing a about things that are in outer space that could harm us. Speculation about what these objects are, what they range from, the damage that they can do, all of those. And the movies, predictive programming, it's all through the flicks, the black ops projects. You'd say it can't happen? I beg to differ with you. The New Age Christ is being set up to appear. It's now, almost now, ready to be technologically feasible. When lasers bounce from satellite back to Earth, the light rays can be bent in such a manner as to appear the flames are coming from the sky. These satellites can also be used to project a third-dimensional holographic image viewable by a third of the Earth's population. There's even technology to make the image speak in the language of the areas to which it's beamed to. Oh, the Illuminati have gone through a lot of planning to get this far. They're not going to drop the ball now. The Egyptians and Vedic cultures built the pyramids in the shape of Orion's belt, the imagined home of the gods. You observe the three stars of the Orion's belt forming a pattern in the sky that's identical to the ground plan of the Giza pyramids. The celestial counterpart of Osiris is Orion, the constellation of the ancient Egyptians, depicted by means of three characteristic belt stars. And since Osiris was said to have ruled in the first time, as it's known, I wonder where this could be, whether this could be the reason why the three great pyramids of Giza depict the three stars of Orion's belt as they looked 12,500 years ago, at what might reasonably be defined as their astronomical first time. Yes, the great days of Atlantis, the Aryan race of Atlantis, or the Giza pyramids recalls that. The Zayat Al-Aryan pyramids' mere location implies that it was part of a master plan to replicate the Orion constellation in and around Giza. It's undeniable that that pyramid sits in the exact topographical location of the star Beltegeez. This fact, supported by the Giza pyramid's precise connection to the stars Alnitak, Alnilam, and Mintaka, the Orion's belt stars that were mentioned earlier in the show, make the Orion pyramid theory come to life. The arrival of the Antichrist, the Merovingian Grail Bearer, will be staged via a UFO landing on Mount Zion. Aleister Crowley's design of the chariot card on his tarot card deck depicts a Knight Templar holding a disc that represents the Grail. Anyone having read the Holy Blood and Holy Grail would know that the Templars were knights pledged to defend the Merovingian Grail bloodline. And you should know that the Grail Bearer represented in the tarot card is depicted in amber-colored or red-colored association with the Merovingians. Amber or orange appears repeatedly in accounts of UFO sightings. Crowley, in his Book of Thoth, wrote, "The charioteer is clothed in the amber-colored armor appropriate to the sign. He's throned in the chariot rather than conducting it, because the whole system of progression is perfectly balanced. His only function is to bear the Holy Grail, the bearer of the Grail, depicted in Attu, the sixth tarot card, may therefore be identified with the bringer to earth of the Sangreal, or royal blood. The blood which flows in the veins of the kingly man mentioned by Crowley, although not understood by him in the sense of a transhuman intelligence. Crowley's design for the Grail resembles as closely as can be for a pre-1947 representation, a shape frequently described in connection with particular types of UFO phenomenon. Pre-1947, because that year was the modern explosion of accounts of UFO sightings around the world. The UFO carrying the Grail bearer is astrologically and mythologically represented by the chariot of King Arthur, whose return is anticipated in the person of the next Grail King. Arcturus, the golden red star situated on the left knee of Boots, the fourth brightest in the sky. It'll come to pass. I bet you and I see it. Experience it. This has been a View from Space on Talk Radio AM 640. Coast to Coast is next. I'm Space and I'm out.